Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Rebecca Green, an artist obsessed with recipes.
How to make friends with a ghost. Here's the do's and the don'ts. If you want to get close to a ghost, here you go. First, you gotta find one. Ghost say boo. Then be super kind to them. Ghost say boo. Wave and say hi when the ghosts say boo. And they'll be friends with you. Don't try to run away when ghosts say boo. Just tell.
Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 383 of the podcast with Rebecca Green. Rebecca's picture book debut, How to Make Friends with a Ghost, has a somewhat serendipitous story as far as children's books are concerned, and the fact that the charm and warmth of the story has stayed at its heart is a testament to Rebecca's heart in and of itself. This story is all sorts of charming, and I especially love that Rebecca catches me off guard at the end of the conversation by pitching a challenge to the readers. Now, the song you heard at the top of the show is Emily Arrow singing How to Make Friends with a Ghost, a song she wrote inspired by Rebecca's book. And if you listen to the end of this chat, we play the song in its entirety for you to enjoy. Thank you, Emily, for sharing that with everyone. But why don't we get right to the show? This is episode number 383 of the podcast with Rebecca Green. Happy listening. Welcome to the podcast, Rebecca Green, and happy debut picture book. Yay!
Thank you. I'm excited.
I'm excited. I've had a copy of this book for maybe almost as long as you have.
That's so funny.
Those darlings, yeah, so Tundra, they're so excited, and I'm glad. Yeah. So, yay. I was just going to say congratulations for How to Make Friends with a Ghost. What a great debut.
Thanks. I'm really excited. And yeah, it's been like a two-year project for me, too. It like went through a original phase, and then you know, Tundra asked if it could be a real book, so it feels like a long time coming. So, and yeah, I'm excited about it.
Wait, if it could be a real book, did you have it as a not a real book beforehand?
Was this like a,
I want to talk about what the book is, but we're here. I want to know what form did this take before being the thing that I can hold now?
Well, it was a book, but it wasn't a book. I guess I wanted to celebrate fall, which I love, and I was the idea came like all in a day and rushed to me, and it was just it was 22, 25 pages, and it was like the skeleton, the shell of this story, but it was actually called What to Do When a Ghost Finds You, and I printed like 125 copies and just put it up on my website, and I didn't really plan on like fully submitting it, and you know, like it was enough just to do the project. And then I kind of put it out into the world, and Tara from Tundra called me and said, can we publish this? You know, I love the dummy book, which was funny because I didn't really see it as a dummy book. I just saw it as, you know, a little project that I wanted to make.
Right.
And so, and then they asked if we could extend the content, and I added more stuff and redid all the illustrations and went through the whole process of making it a book. So it feels like this is
it's like the 2.0 version or
it
something.
It is. Yeah, it's really
got,
exciting.
Yeah, it's got the, as you said, it's got the skeleton of the original story there, but you've changed.
Changed.
So you said you even changed the illustrations and things.
Yeah, everything. I mean, a lot of the illustrations that were in the original one, they're the same, but I just redrew them all. So all of the illustrations are redone, and then there's added content and stuff like that. But yeah, the main frame is like the same, but it is like the 2.0 version. It just feels crazy to hold it in my hand and know that it's a real book.
It's a real thing with like binding glue that smells nice and all that good stuff.
Yeah, like a bookcase and end papers and Library of Congress notes in the back. It's crazy.
Yeah, you've got all that SIP information, all the stuff that tells the world this is yours. Don't infringe copyright.
Yeah.
Well, so. I love your book. I'm so glad that I've gotten to live with it. I haven't lived with it for 2 years, but for a little bit of time, and it's been really enjoyable to read and absorb it, and to reread it, and to discover new things. I would love to talk about all the great things I found inside, but why don't I first let you have a chance to share with the people listening just what is this story? What is the story going on in How to Make Friends with a Ghost?
Well, the story originally started with, I'm a detail person. So originally I had thought, was working on another project and was feeling kind of uninspired and thought I had to do an illustration for fall. And I thought about this girl with animals and she was having cider, and I thought, well, that's boring. I don't want to do animals. So I thought, what if she had cider with a ghost? And then I thought, well, do ghosts even drink cider? And I thought, well, what if she was reading? And I thought, well, what would she even read to them? And then it just kind of spiraled. So it started with like really small details and then kind of blossomed into this friendship that this girl makes with this ghost. And she, you know, in the book, it talks about not going out to look for a ghost. People hunt ghosts all the time and you can never really find them. But if you're sweet, warm, and kind, a ghost will find you. And it just kind of chronicled, it's like it's a how-to, but then it also follows this girl who, in that how-to, we see her friendship grow with the ghost. And they grow together into adulthood and into old age. And so it's kind of, it's a how-to, and then it's also a chronological sort of look at their friendship.
Oh, I have to just flip to the old age. You have the greatest line. It says, in the tab called Growing Old, it says, you will get old, but your ghost never will. It will still want to collect leaves, acorns, and worms.
it's so sad.
There's this beautiful picture, though, of just companionship. It's wonderful.
Yeah. It mirrors the first page. And that was... that was in the original, in the bare bones, and this little girl in the activities, you know, she's taking her ghost, and you know, the truth is we do get old, and so it just kind of shows their friendship, and the ghost is still like the same quirky character, but now the ghost is taking care of her.
Right, where she was running ahead before, now he's, and he was falling behind. Now he's ahead and taking care of her. It's so sweet. And I should say, for those that haven't seen it yet, and you'll see on the cover when I post the episode, I love the color palette that you use here, Rebecca.
Thank you.
The tones of red, really the autumnal tones of red. You've got like these red orange mixing in with shades of gray. It's so delicate and welcoming, though. There's nothing about this at all that screams like ghosts are boogie scary.
Yeah,
but yet you play with lots of those like creepy tingly finger kind of things. It's so sweet the way you've handled it.
Thank you. Yeah, I wanted to, as far as the color palette, I wanted it to be limited, but I didn't want it to feel like Halloween, you know, orange and black, but I wanted to bring fall colors and make it feel kind of accessible outside of Halloween too. But yeah, I think opening it up to too many colors, just like a full color range, was overwhelming. I wanted to like really kind of tone it down. So,
well, I like that. Well done. I like also that the way you've sort of toned down the story was by using a narrator that is an omnipotent narrator that apparently is like a well-published narrator. There were just these little things. Every time I read it, I was like, this narrator is amazing. let me jump around, but there's at one point it's talking about the recipes or the foods that ghosts like to eat. after listing recommended tasty dishes such as musty biscuits with toe jam, dead leaf salad with boutons, there's an asterisk at the bottom that's like, For these and more recipes, see my book, Superstitious and Nutritious, Wacky Snackies for Your Ghost. It's the world building that you did to make this picture book exist is something so much bigger than the book itself, which I think allows the book to have so much of a voice. So bravo for that. I really enjoyed that voice you used.
Thank you. I had so much fun doing that. I was kind of cracking myself up. They're just so silly. And I wanted to make sure that they like stayed in the final and the editor liked them. So yeah, it would be a dream to like make all these books happen. So I would love to do like a cookbook for ghosts and like build a whole world.
I'm going to be watching your Instagram feed just to see if even like book cover, if you do book cover reveals for your narrator's books.
I should build like a whole, I don't know. Maybe I should have come up with a pseudonym and, and not me, because I'm not an expert. Okay, that's true. That's true.
I love it. I love.
I could find a way.
I love the notes that our expert narrator has so that when you are visiting schools, you will know Rebecca as the author and illustrator, but not as the narrator.
That's a good way to look at it.
But
yeah.
you'll know as these children draw with you that, oh, wait a second, your ghost that you drew isn't healthy. You've got to give the rosy cheeks to know that a healthy ghost has rosy cheeks, you say in one of those diagrams. Little things like that you've added are just, it goes back to world building, which I feel like taps so deeply into the worlds that your readers bring to stories. So there's just... I just smile. I'm smiling now, looking at the rosy chicos looking back at me.
Well, thank you. And I mean, I am going to take that note because this is really the first time that I will go and interact with. I've done like school visits before just as an illustrator, but it's going to be different, like sharing a book. And, you know, I want to figure out ways to bring this book to kids and that type of stuff. So that will be funny to like act as an expert. It's just so funny to take it all so seriously, even though it's obviously not. And so, I'm going to take that note.
Wait, but to say the line, taking something so seriously, even though it's obviously not, I need to tell you that you said that as my brain went to, yeah, just like Harry Potter, how we all think that that's real. spoke that line and it stopped me. But you're right. Well, we all of us want permission to have things like this be real, to have that be our reality just for some time. And so fun though, that you will have that opportunity in front of children to play along with them like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That is really, I'm excited to read it to them and do activities and sort of make it more real. So
I think that that'll be a ton of fun. Speaking of the making your art real, though, just to go directly to the way you made the art, are you using traditional media?
Yeah, this is mostly colored pencil, and then the yellow is gouache.
You've left, and this is the greatest thing, but you've left your like stroke lines, the colored pencil lines in there. I always love seeing that in illustration because it draws me to run my fingers over the page as if I'd ever be able to feel the texture, but it grounds the illustrations, and that is something that's just really nice. I'm doing it like I have to resist doing it as we speak. I know the microphone will not like that, but
well, thank you. That's one of my favorite things about colored pencil in regards to materials, because there's just so much texture you can get with it that, you know, you can't, it's just so many different directions you can take the pencil, and there's two, you know, there's a whole different array of color pencils. There's really soft ones and really hard lead ones, and I combine all of those so that you have and I've combined all those in this book, so, you know, something might feel really soft and something might feel like really hard edged, and those I just love playing with those really minimal textures, really subtle, but really fun.
So after you decide on the color palette you're going to use for the book, like let's say you used, I don't know, 12 or 15 different colors, do you just go to the art store and buy like 30 pencils of each color? What is that? I've never had the opportunity to ask, like, what you must go through. I mean, you must go through some pencils to make a book, right?
Yeah, you do. I do go through pencils. I think I have like, I just have a giant box of color pencils that I've had, you know, and I keep kind of refilling and adding to for, you know, the last probably 10 years. And so I really just dug out all of the grays that I had. And, you know, some of those are really warm, some of them are cool, and I would find the ones that I really loved, and I'd have to end up replacing those for sure and going to the art store and buying more of those. But yeah, it's just going and finding the colors and picking them out and picking out some hard lead and picking some soft. And then the red and the peach, that peach color, I like go through that pencil like nobody's business because I just love that color. So I have a lot of those. The green as well. I mean, I generally use kind of neutral, muddy colors anyway. So I had a lot of these in my box, in my pencil box. And so I, picked out all the colors and then ended up just having to go buy more. So.
Well, I like it.
Thanks. Fun.
I like just the color palette's so pretty. I also like your hand lettering, by the way, cause it looks like ribbons or noodles. But with my brain going to that, I wanted to point out back to the recipes. I'm going to hop all over your book, Rebecca, because every page, I'm obsessed with every page of this book. Okay, so let's talk about recipes. You have included, there are lots of picture books that include recipes in books. And it's like, hey, you read this great book about pizza. Let's make pizza together. Or this great book about matzo balls. Let's make matzo balls. You include a recipe, including a number of servings for floating spaghetti and meatballs. Now.
Mudballs.
What did I say? Meatballs? Yeah. My bad.
Yeah. Floating, no, that's okay.
Floating spaghetti and mudballs. Now, the greatest thing about this recipe is instruction number one, because I feel like you've got two kinds of readers. You've got readers that will read instruction number one, and if they can't pull it off, they will stop. And then you've got readers that will just jump to instruction number two and try to make up instruction number one at some point. And instruction number one is one. Boil witch hair for 6 hours. But then after that, it's just like roll mud into balls and refrigerate for 2 hours. I can totally do that.
Yes. That's so funny because I actually like when I'm not writing or making art, I'm just like reading recipes and cooking. So that is, I had to throw a recipe in here, and I've done that so many times, like bought all the stuff for it, ready to make it. The first one is like, marinate something for 48 hours in the refrigerator. Oh, it makes me so mad. So I'm bad at like not reading the whole thing, but this was so fun to put together because I'm obsessed with recipes. So, I would be interested to see if anybody like makes this. I mean, obviously not makes this, but like wants to make floating spaghetti and mud balls with their kids and just pretends. I think that'd be fun. Maybe I'll do it. I don't know.
I was going to say, I hear that as a challenge. I bet there are some crafty kids and parents out there that could totally do this and bring it to Instagram. I'm not good with like the tricks of camera, but I know it can be done to make things look floaty.
That's true.
It's amazing. And then
I want to see it.
Yeah. Then you'll have even more ground to make an entire ghost cookbook. This is wonderful. I like this. Instagram, we can all help you make the next book a reality.
Thank you. Let me know what spooky recipes you like. I'm thinking about it.
Oh my word, I love it. Wait, so when you made this book in 48 hours, how much of all of these like sprinklings of ghost care existed? The feeding the ghost and taking care and the dance parties and all these things, how much of it stayed intact?
So the whole thing really stayed intact, but it's the details. For instance, like if I was really to go through it, like the beginning didn't have the first two, three pages. I honestly don't remember. I think it just started. I should have pulled out the original book that I had. It just started with the little poem, and it didn't have the the classification guide or anything like that. And it just basically had, don't put your hand through a ghost, blow the ghost in the door to get it inside. Those simple things. It had a snack page, didn't have a recipe. It had three activities, so the dance party, and that wasn't included. The bedtime with the bath time, that wasn't part of it. The hiding spots were, and then the hazards were. And then it ended, you know, and then growing old too. So it was like three basic.
You really just brought us in. The things you added were just bringing us more into the story.
Yeah. So nothing was, like I said, it was like the skeleton was there, but it was just more well-rounded. And I really have to say that the editors, Tara and Jessica, did a super job on that, because it did take us a while to figure out, like, well, what is the best layout for the book? What makes the most sense? Because it is a story, but it's also kind of a serious how-to. And
right.
So everything has to be laid out right. So we did, you know, we went back and forth a lot on how things should be laid out and how much should be added and how to keep the original intact, but also, like, add, you know, new and exciting things. And, yeah, for me, it was really exciting to add, like, to add more content, to think about, oh my God, like, I didn't even think how could you give a ghost a bath? And then I got to come up with, well, you would put it in a cauldron and blow, blah, 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 blah over.
Yeah.
So I got to just, like, make stuff up after the fact. So it was really fun.
What does editing look like with this then? Was it like the editor said, I think we need a little bit more in the beginning or in this part or that part? Or was it just, we need about 4 more pages, add wherever you feel at first like it needs it? How much guidance happens when you make books? Pardon my ignorance. I'm sorry. That's a really ignorant question.
That's not ignorant at all. I mean, honestly, this is the first time I had ever done it, so I had no clue. And I kept telling them, like, I'm an amateur. You're going to have to walk me through it. You're going to have to hold my hand. So, I mean, I had no idea. And I'm trying to think back because it was all, you know, it was all a year ago. But I think they basically just said, add, we want more content. So it went through a couple of renditions where I had like a table of contents and I had an index, a bibliography in the back that like had a, you know, it was like a resource book. Mm. And then, we ended up cutting most of that and kind of, you know, clearing it and making it, I think, just more of a picture book. I think a lot of that was just too much. But I think, yeah, when I initially like made it and I just made it fuller, when I added the table of contents, the front and the back, I just added more to the interior pages and we just kind of went from there and cut some of the stuff and added more of the stuff. And then after the whole thing was put together, we had to go through and like talk about how the beginning made sense, and how the end made sense and how it really tied the book together and how there was like a good enough introduction to it. So like for instance, the first and second page were added like right at the end of the editing process. It started in with, you know, ghosts are tricky to track down. So it's advisable that you do not try to look for one. And this is like our introduction page. But we added the first and second page cause we really needed something that was a good sort of leeway into the story. So it was just kind of back and forth through the whole time of adding here, taking away here. Just a collaboration.
I love considering that when I think about the writing I do with my students, that you might write a story and in the editing process, it might not just be editing the words that you have down or the sentences that you have, but it might actually be expanding the story to fit the pacing to something that welcomes the reader a little bit better.
Yeah. And that was something, yeah, it's definitely, I mean, the words, are part of it. They're a huge part of it, but more so it's the timing and, the space that you give the reader and how they turn the pages. And that's something that's very new for me, you know, as a new picture book maker. So working with, the editors was huge for me. And I really, you know, I trusted them. I do trust them to make the book as good as possible. So it was a lot of work in figuring out like how it should all be sort of filled out.
Right. Well, so. I think that you're also, you know, testifying to the team that brings picture books together. That
definitely.
It's never, ever. I've heard from lots of different people about different ways that they've interacted with their editors, the different people, the art directors and different hands on deck that have helped shape the story. But every single story is different. And that's a beautiful thing to know that no matter where you come in, they find your story, they love your story, and they want to work with you to help you, maybe we could say, like fully realize your idea.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and just the fact that somebody wants to make a book that you wrote, I mean, that means they have a lot of trust in you. You
yeah,
know, that's a really big deal. So you want to, and there's a lot that can come out of that trust when you feel like it's being appreciated and loved, you know, what you're making and they know what they're doing. So there's trust on both ends, which is really nice.
There's a couple things more that I want to ask that I'm like, so excited to get to, but I'm going to hold off just to let this name just exist in the world for a moment. Ready? The name.
I read.
Dr. Fantonius Spookle. Rebecca, oh my God.
Ridiculous.
You're amazing at names. Do you make lists of names, or was that a name that just...
I really like making names, yes.
There are names that I've written, like pulled out of the ether, and I was like, oh, that's a good name. And other times when I've named characters and I'm like, this is not this character's name. I need to figure out what the right name is.
It's but so funny. It's
Dr.
Such a
Fantonius Spookle.
Yeah.
Yes.
This one was definitely created just specifically for this book. But I love making up names. I just think it's so funny when you just find a good name, or you like meet, you know, you hear of a real person and they have a name. There's a lot to a name. So I want this guy to, or gal, I guess I picture him as a guy in my head, but, I want them to exist in real life.
that phrase right there, that statement, I fully believe you.
Who would be a ghost expert and poet? You're like a scientist, an expert in like ghosts, and you also write poetry.
Right?
Yeah.
Your poems, you said they were here from the start. They're so,
yes.
They're so beautiful. Whenever I read metered poetry, I think having read a lot of it, I'm always like the hairs on the back of my neck go up with the, is this meter going to stick or not? Please let it work. Please let it work.
Yes.
And when it works out so beautifully that it just sings off the page. I mean, you have a ghost is nearly impossible to find. You can look till your face turns blue. But if you're a person who is sweet, warm, and kind, a ghost may come out and find you. Ah, the landing that you have on that beat is just, and you do it at the end too. It's so good. Yeah.
Thank you. I love writing. Yeah. I was like afraid that I would have to kind of take the poems out. But I don't remember if it ever came up to take them out, but like, I know that we worked hard and I worked hard to like make sure that they were in there. Cause I love them. And that was like when I first started writing it, I mean like the very, very first day when I sat down, like that's how the book started, was with the poems. Cause I just like, I like writing little poems and making illustrations with them. So I'm really glad that we found a way. And we can, because we have like a different, character sort of writing them, you know, it's not me. So I get to sort of add them as like a, it's just a resource really.
I can see like the big picture of how you talk about this book of like, well, I mean, it's not me. There's somebody else wrote this book. And this poem is not, it means he's a doctor. Wrote
yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess I wrote it. Yeah. But in my head, no, I
no,
did
but
it.
that suspension of reality, I think working with children and also writing, that is something that takes work for adults to let go.
Yeah.
But it doesn't for children. And so again, when adults can do it in a way that feels, let me compliment you this way, it feels natural. It doesn't feel forced. And there absolutely are picture books that feel a little bit like they're trying. And I think there's probably books that feel a lot like they're trying that just don't get published. but yours just feels like it's there. Like you let the idea go where it needed to go. And thank goodness it was such a sweet, loving direction too. Because that is exactly what your characters, the way that you drew them, needed. They needed it to be kind, warm, and sweet.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's a huge compliment. I mean, I'm glad that it comes off as natural. I think that stuff is really fun for me to do. And, you know, I don't really see myself as a writer. So I like to, you know, kind of jot those things down in sketchbooks, and they're fun. And so to kind of see it like come to real life and having let that sort of natural spontaneity, and just it was fun for me to do. So I'm glad that it comes off as natural and, you know, and not forced.
Yeah.
So
Rebecca, clearly I love this book. I know many, many people already are talking about how much they love this book. But in all the questions that I asked you, is there anything that I didn't ask that you wanted to share about your process or inspiration or anything at all that you want to share with people listening?
Oh my goodness. I don't know if there's anything as far as like inspiration or process, but I will say there's a little tiny hidden gem. And I would like to know if the kids can find it. The girl in the story has a name, but the name isn't anywhere on the book except for one tiny little piece. So that's just a little, that's a challenge for people to find her name.
Oh, I love that. Find her name. She has a name. That's wonderful. Well, I was saying that other people are loving this book, and one of those people is a mutual friend of ours, and that's Emily Arrow. Emily Arrow, who I haven't had on the show in so long. I can't wait to have her back on. And in fact, she'll be, in a manner of speaking, on this show.
Yes.
Because why, Rebecca? Do you want to share? Why is Emily on the show?
I feel bad because I feel like she should be here to announce it, but I'll announce it since I'm here and she's not. She made a song for this ghost book, and it is so... It is really so sweet. I like my husband and I have been listening to it. You know what? Let me back up and say that before I talk about Emily Arrow, I do have to say, as far as inspiration goes, my husband was a huge part. He's an English teacher, and he was huge in helping me like with the ending of the story and with some of the details. So so he is really excited about this book, and he and I have been listening to this Emily Arrow song, and he is like, he'll walk around singing and he's like, can we just listen to it one more time? Can we just listen to it one more time? So we both are like obsessed with it, and it gets stuck in your head, and like she picked out all the details perfectly. So we love it. I love it. So, well, so I'm excited for her to be here.
I've never gotten to ask Emily so directly about this process, but I know I can ask you, and she was just over at your place today as of recording this. This, I know that you both met because you now live in the same part of the country.
Yes.
But how did Emily meet this book?
I think, man, we met on Instagram. Somebody just kind of connected us, and we had coffee, and I think I just mentioned that it was coming out, and she said, I want to write a song about it. And she actually was in, she was in Canada doing a school visit, and she went to visit the folks at Tundra, and they gave her an advanced copy of it. She met them, fell in love with them. And then like, just, it was all kind of like organic and natural. I don't remember like a time where, you know, she was like, here's the book and I'm going to make a song, or, you know, what do you think of making a song?
I think that Emily, I think many of us that work in children's literature on this side work in that same way of, is there a connection there? And certainly if you're having coffee, if you're making that connection, if you see something in a person, it's very, very easy to see them in their books. I often work the opposite way, that I see everyone's books. And when I connect with the book, it's very exciting for me to meet the person, despite, for example, you being a complete stranger, because I feel that I know you in some part because of your book.
Yeah,
and so it doesn't surprise me that Emily works very closely that way.
Yeah.
So she got the book, and then this is not a book though that you and her wrote together. This was one that she surprised you with the song though.
Yeah, she was like, I mean, I knew she was gonna write one for it, and you know, it's almost September, and we were talking about, well, she'll be there for the book launch, and I knew that she was going to write one for it, and we went out to lunch, and we were kind of talking about it, and that night, she was like, I was just so inspired that we were talking about everything, and I just went home, and I just wrote it, so she sent it to me, and it's of course awesome, so yeah, so it was just sort of I wasn't expecting her to, but just really, really happy that she did.
No.
I mean, I would have loved to ask her, but I don't know how that stuff works for her either. Like, what if she really didn't like it, or what if she? I mean, I would assume she'd really want to just write about things that she loves.
Because she, being a musician or being anyone that covers books, you only have a certain amount of time in the day, and certainly you want to be inspired to write something. But
totally,
anyone that's listened to either of her two albums or anything she does online can tell that she does deeply care about the things that she shares. So
yeah, definitely. Well, I was glad she wanted to do one about this.
Yeah. So why don't I leave it with this? The people listening will get to hear Emily perform that song at the end of this podcast, so they can listen to it again and again and hear it.
Yeah, it's really great.
Yay, I'm excited. I have not heard it yet, but it's so nice to have Emily already bookending the podcast as she plays the introduction music to the podcast, but it'll be nice to have some different outro music and to have it be about this wonderful book we've been talking about. So let me just say, Rebecca, thank you. for sharing your book with me. I love it. I love it. And I love that you are the person behind it. You were just the right one to bring this story to life. And I can't wait for it to connect with readers and for you also to connect with those readers. You've done a wonderful job.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So to bring us back to those readers, and of course you're welcome. I hope you get a million praises and the best ones from the 5 and 6 and 7 year olds that will be listening to this next part. I'm going to leave you with this question. I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. Is there a message, Rebecca, that I can bring to them from you?
I would say the saddest thing in my day-to-day is when I meet adults and they say, I wish I could draw. And I say, you can, you should just draw. And they say, well, I used to draw when I was little, but then I stopped. And I think kids should just keep drawing no matter what, or keep cutting paper and making things or sculpting things or doing whatever, and don't stop when you feel that you're bad at it or you have to do other things in your life. You can keep drawing as an adult. You should never stop drawing.
The podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 350 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. And Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with the books they'll love. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect any ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Ruth Spiro and Irene Chan share Baby Loves Quantum Physics and other titles in their hit board book series. See you then, and thanks for listening.
How to make friends with a ghost. Here's the do's and the don'ts. If you want to get close to a ghost, here you go. First you gotta find one. Go say boo. Then be super kind to them. Go say boo. Wave and say hi when the ghosts say boo, and they'll be friends with you. Don't try to run away when ghosts say boo. Just tell the ghost your name when ghosts say boo. Don't stick your hand through even if you want to, and they'll be friends with you. Food when ghosts say boo. Let them cook too when ghosts say boo. Make a moldy toast and earwax too, and they'll be friends with you. Don't put them in the laundry, ghosts say boo. Don't eat them by mistake when ghosts say boo. Ghosts aren't marshmallows and they aren't tissues, but they'll be friends with you. Books when ghosts say boo. Tell them lots of jokes when ghosts say boo. Knock, knock, who's there? It's boo, boo hoo, and they'll be friends with you. How to and the don'ts. If you wanna get close to a ghost, here you go.
We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.